Here we go. Relationships, sometimes religion, Chris Harrington's reality all the time. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online. Take no big thing to wear for the value. Take no big thing, the toll of the bell. I probated the spare for days. I trolled downtown the red light place. Jump up for the luck, what's in store? Love is the drug and I need. Showing up, showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake free. Love is the drug, got a hook on me. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? Love is the drug. You beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is Wednesday, January 30th, 2013, the only last Wednesday of January 2013 in the history of the world. Each time at this week, beautiful humans, as you know, we welcome in the intermediator of the good news. Please say hello to Nacogdoches, Texas's own Mr. Chris Harrington.
Good evening. I see those human ape-like creatures banging away on those bones in that pile of debris.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
When was that was Stanley Kubrick that did 2001 yeah. A Space Odyssey. When was that movie? That movie came out in the 70s, didn't it?
1969. Yeah.
A very good year.
Yeah, it was a good year. I think I was 16 years old, something like that.
I was 9. It was my first year at Camp Menominee in northern Wisconsin.
There you go.
It was a huge. Dude, you sound like you are. Are you on the? Are you in the closet tonight? Are you on the floor?
No, actually, I'm on my regular telephone. I've been going at it like gangbusters today, working all day, and both my other telephones are dead, so I'm on my hard line.
You like literally a cord that's coming off the phone?
Yeah, there's literally a cord coming.
Wow, that's old school right there.
Old school, that's right.
You're always on your hard line.
Yeah.
But this has got a cord. You're on your cord line.
Yeah.
This is Glenn Klein Online. It is the good news. Sean O'Halloran in the studio tonight, as always, ready to take your calls if you dare to call. 1-800-436-3260, toll-free all over North America, worldwide at 813-425-5773. Well, last we met, young man, I had had a hell of a day, and I had another one today, but...
I was going to say, versus what?
Well, here's what happens, of course, you guys that... logged in, whether you're live or on the archive. Last week, you learned that Kimber had moved out a week ago today, and that my daughter Gracie was what we call in Florida Baker acted, admitted to a mental health facility later on that afternoon. It was a heck of a day.
And so here's the update. I've been in touch with Kimber, and she's doing good. And and with Gracie, she Saturday I went to visit her. I visited her on Tuesday night. Or, excuse me, on Thursday night. I visited her on Saturday. And on Saturday, she had tested positive for pot and what they call the street drug, which was the synthetic pot that she has smoked called Spice. It's legal to buy. It's not legal to smoke, and it's not good. It's not a natural product as opposed to marijuana. And so the mental health facility does not handle drug situations. So that Saturday. This last Saturday, she was being transferred to a drug rehab unit, which I knew. And so I go and visit her, and she knew. I didn't say anything to her, but she told me this was happening. She was cool with it. She's a little spacey on the drugs. Isn't it interesting that they give somebody that's on drugs, they give them more drugs? But she was a little spacey. And so I was planning on going from the mental health situation to the drug rehab center to sign her in. I get in my truck, and I turn the truck on, and it starts smoking everywhere. And I have to have my truck towed on Saturday instead of going to the drug rehab center. And so I do that. And then on Tuesday – no, what is today? Today's Wednesday. So on Monday, the folks at the drug rehab place get in touch with Dawn.
Yeah.
And they tell her that Gracie has been stabilized and that she can come home now, that she needs to come home. And so Dawn picked her. Yes. So Dawn picked her up yesterday.
Okay.
And Gracie's given name is Jessica Grace. And she's just pretty much always been Grace or Gracie. She announced to her mother upon being picked up yesterday evening that she was no longer to be known as Gracie, that she was leaving her behind at the drug rehab center, and that she now is going by Jesse G, or Jesse, or Jessica. And it's really interesting, Chris, because when she would go into school, her legal name is Jessica Klein.
Right.
So she would always kind of turn up a nose when somebody would call her Jessica. But now she's embracing it. And as I reminded my daughter Hannah, our oldest daughter, who's just graduated with honors from the University of Central Florida, who really was taken aback by that Gracie was changing her name to Jessie, or at least embracing her first name.
Sure.
I said, listen, it's there's a significant, what's the word?
Meaning?
No, not meaning. When something happens before, there's precedence. There's very significant precedence behind this, because Jacob had his name changed to Israel, and Saul, the murderer, had his name changed to Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Gracie was embracing the first half of her name, Jessica and Jesse. She go ahead, Sean.
You forgot Sean Puffy Combs changed to P. Diddy.
That's true.
That's right.
That is very true.
Yeah.
And so our first get together with Jesse G last night went pretty well. I mean, she was more with it, but we had developed this contract for her of what she needed to do in the home, and she initially was very, very belligerent and disrespectful and very profane. And I said, Jess, and I made sure that I called her Jess and Jesse. I said, that's number five on this list. You can't do this anymore. And so what she did was she turned over the little agreement and she rewrote it in her own words and agreed to it all. It was pretty cool, actually. It actually turned out very well.
Great.
Yep. So that's pretty much your update, folks.
As far as more of an update,
next week I will be in Wisconsin on business, and so we will take that week off. We'll be back on the 13th of February, assuming everything goes well. We really appreciate Sean for everything that he has done and is doing. And, you know, one of the things, Chris, maybe since we're taking a little time off here, we could do a little bit of a recap
Sure.
of where we've come from and what I've learned and what I've embraced during this mediation process and during this radio show. You guys realize that Chris and I do a lot of work off the air, and the most of our work is done via phone and messaging and emailing. But as we started the program and I said religion some of the time, one of the things that I've learned is that much of the decisions that we make and much at the core of the difference between responding and reacting is a religious matter, if you will. It is the case when we act out of self-righteousness and feeling that we're better than somebody else or trying to prove that we're better, therefore acting out of our insecurity, that's a religious issue or a spiritual issue.
I could go for that.
I thought you could. All right, yeah. So here is my list.
Okay.
Of it's a partial list. It's a little bit long, but you guys will enjoy it, I think. Chris has seen this, and I developed this list. Not that it's not a good exercise just in general, but going through everything that I've gone through and being as close as I am with my father, who lives in California, he asked me to comprise this list of the things that I've learned over the last couple of years specifically, and more targeted would be what I've gained over the last many months. But the first thing, Chris, you haven't seen, and it is very important.
Okay.
And so here are the things that I'm learning and have learned since this mediation process has started. Number one is never intentionally put a person in a humiliating situation. That's a really important one. I fall in love way too easily. I found out that my propensity to dive in head first without checking the depth of a situation could cause major headaches. Pardon me?
Diving in head first without a helmet.
Without a helmet or without checking out the depth of the situation, or my depth, if you will, or how deep I am, can cause major headaches, and not just for me. The pain that I've caused by not taking other people's feelings and perspectives into consideration before acting and or speaking, I've learned about. What the emotional distress that having your lover hook up with a good friend of yours feels like. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, it sucks. That I am capable of overcoming a lot of shit. The level of my insecurity and my need for attention that I've had has been realized in my being-in-your-face attitude and actions. That there is a time and a place for everything and the importance of discerning that time and place, I've learned. The importance of being able to stand on my own two feet financially. By the way, things are starting to happen for me financially. And when we started this thing, Chris, you asked me what my number one thing was that I need, and I said I got to get my act together professionally, financially. I've learned since then, this was something that I've learned, that while it is great and it will be great to be more financially stable, that wasn't as important as I thought it was. It's just a byproduct of the more important things. I've learned the importance of being organized, focused, and budgeting my time and money. I've learned that you can't love somebody for the person you want them to be, but for the person they are, with warts and all. That people can only truly love and like others when they first love and like themselves. That overconsumption is counterproductive to effectiveness. That fairness is an evil bitch that will turn around and bite you in the ass. And that it's got no place potentially, or it's got no place in potentially successful relationships. You guys, fairness, I mean, there is no fairness. That I should do what I do because it's in my heart to do so, not because I get approval or praise of others or to get them to do something for me. This is a big one. That there is a huge difference between reacting and responding. That some of my inquisitiveness, which is natural for me, is actually morbid curiosity and is really an attempt at self-punishment and is akin to emotional cutting. that in order to be a successful life coach, I have to be living out what I coach myself, not perfectly, but consistently and progressively. That just because everybody thinks a certain way doesn't mean that there is not a more effective way to approach things. That how loving and patient and understanding people in my life have been with me is one of the most important things that I've learned. That, to quote Yogi Berra, it ain't over till it's over. That keeping a sense of humor in the midst of turmoil and tragedy is paramount. And the last thing on my list that I've learned during this intermediation process with Chris is that I will be learning and relearning until I take my last breath, that I will never totally arrive.
Yeah, it ain't over. For any of us.
Exactly.
We're all going through it.
All right, so what do you think?
That's awesome. That's some good stuff. Really good stuff.
Questions, comments, criticisms?
What, from me?
Yeah. No, from the all the callers that are calling.
All right. Yeah, knock those phones right off the off the hook. That's right.
Dude, you are completely out of it tonight.
Who?
You.
No, man, I'm just totally chilled out. I have had a great day. It was I got a lot of stuff done, and then I wound the day up by walking down to the creek for a mile and a half. I just had a great time. I'm totally
That's why you're so tired.
Yeah.
You got some of that Texas fresh air.
You know that's right.
I had a really, really crappy day.
Oh.
But a very good evening. I am looking for a renter in my townhouse, and had one yesterday, a very nice young woman, a nursing student from Nigeria, and she was going to move in Saturday. She's going to bring me a deposit tomorrow, and she called me mid-afternoon and said that she would not be moving in. Then I had a blow-up with my son Isaac where I reacted and not responded. And what else happened? Something else happened. I can't even think of it. There's been a lot of good things that have been happening. But okay. One of the good things is that I called him back. He left angry, and I called him back, and we talked it through. And I apologized, and I told him that I had reacted and not responded. But I had a very nice evening, more than nice, prior to the webcast. So here we are.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes. Oh, here's another thing. What was
okay.
The other thing? All right, so I'm not going to have probably not going to see the money that I thought I was going to see tomorrow. You never know what tomorrow is going to bring, obviously.
Yeah.
And something else happened that was expensive, besides my truck blowing up. I don't remember. Things are turning around, though. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, there's generally a shift of energy for you. I can, attest to that. Every day, you can really tell by someone's self-talk, you know. Generally speaking, some stuff went well, some stuff didn't go so great, but you're not beat up by that. You know, you're taking it in stride, and you're able to just make your way through it. You know, when you take life personally, you know, like it's... You know, God is against you, and the demons are out, and all this stuff is coming at you. It's very difficult to face the possibilities of the day and say, I have some chance. You know, I can make a difference in my life. To be optimistic when you think that the whole world is conspiring against you is very difficult.
Right, and I think that is a trap that a lot of people fall into.
Yeah.
Is that because they keep repeating the same patterns and asking the same questions and the same wrong questions or ineffective questions? I've been able to share with the people recently when they've asked me, is this right or is this good or is this bad? And I've been able to pull the dogmatic statement out of that and say, there's nothing good or bad. It's just what it is. It's just a question of what you do with it once you're presented with a situation, and people, of course, continue to repeat their patterns, but it's not, I mean, theoretically, if somebody, I mean, Mother Teresa was probably a pretty good woman, I would think, And yet she was distraught in her old age and in her death about all the devastation and the suffering that she saw around her. And she had what she termed herself a crisis of faith, because she thought that that God was directing these things and that things should have been moving faster than they did. No matter how effective or how righteous people are acting, in other words, they're acting out of their righteousness. You guys realize you're all righteous, right? And so when you tap into your true identity, you make better questions. You have better self-talk, more effective self-talk and questions that you ask yourself. You respond more than react. You respond out of your wholeness as opposed to out of your brokenness.
Absolutely.
But the fact of the matter is, as the bumper sticker in Forrest Gump said, shit happens. I mean, that's just part and parcel with breathing, isn't it?
It's part of it. Yeah. You know, I think in Buddhism says, you know, life is suffering, you know, but there's a way through it. And, you know, even the manure that we get, you know, we can take that and turn it into, you know, something to amend the soil with. So it all gets down to perceptions and perspective and how you're going to deal with stuff.
All right.
That's going to happen. You can't do anything about that.
So how are we going to deal with stuff?
Well, you know, face it as it is. You know, look at it in a realistic sort of way. You can't magic thinking this stuff away. It's not going to just disappear. And some things are just impossible. They're not going to work out. You know, you have to work around it. You can go through it. You know, you can dismiss it. You can run away from it. But it's not going to evaporate. You know, it's there. And that's really difficult. As children, we learn that's pretty difficult to, you know, try to, you know, own our parents. Although some parents give in to all that, and they really do get owned by their kids. But if you're going to stay on top of things and be a mentor to your kids, you have to allow them to see you as a functioning adult who's getting some stuff done. And that's hard for kids because it's beyond their comprehension that you could actually make those huge changes. You know, but that's, I think, part of what being adult is that you you face life, you see it for what it is, you deal with those things you can, and you know, and you let go of some of it, and some of it you tackle with your whole heart, and you work on it, and you pick your battles.
I saw a post on Facebook yesterday that said something akin to "Don't fall in the trap of thinking that you need to grow up."
Yeah.
What would you say to that post?
I think that's a good idea. You know, we have a mentality that we know what maturity is. And I was writing about this the other day about how people project what they think should happen. But there are these situations in life that we know that the whole civilization has had a major transformation in its thinking, and no one saw that coming, you know, that the Earth is not the center of the solar system, or that the stars are expanding away from some point, you know, Hubble discovered, or that there are abstract paintings now, but there weren't any abstract paintings before, say, 1900. They were always a picture of something. If you look in an art history book,
right,
and you look at, you know, the last 10,000 years of human history, all of the pictures will be a picture of a something until 1900. And then somewhere about 1900, 1910, Kandinsky and a few other people started painting paintings that were, what is it?
Why do you think nobody knew.
It was like this, a brand new thought. You can do an abstraction.
Was that just a moment in human history where we were progressing and opening our minds, and within, you know, 60, 70 years, all of a sudden here comes LSD and other mind expansion?
Yeah, I think it's something like that. There's a window of opportunity. Huxley called it the doors of perception when they're open. But sometimes we have a thought that things should go a certain way. Janis Janes wrote this book, The Origin of Consciousness, The Bicameral Mind, and his thought was that over time, our ethics and consciousness have grown, and that until a certain point in civilization we didn't have it, And he points at a certain time period. But then if you go and you look at, like, the metamorphosis, Ovid's metamorphosis, and you see the characters there are showing that exact same kind of consciousness. Sometimes we don't recognize it when it's there. And someone comes by and documents that for us, and we recognize it as a species. So things can be, you know, operationally, it could be that maybe the people that created the pyramids did know that there was an expanding universe, and they did have more information, and we just haven't really ferreted that out yet. But as far as our globally understanding, it wasn't until Hubble actually saw the Doppler effect in operation with the stars.
I listened. Go ahead.
I think that's what happens to us, is that we don't get it until we all get it.
Right. And it's like, obviously, some people over the last couple thousand years realized that slavery wasn't a good idea. But now pretty much the vast majority of the planet realizes that keeping people enslaved is really not good, not advisable, not effective. But on the Doppler effect, I was listening to the show last week, and Sean, your analogy of the siren being right there and then just getting further and further away. I cannot tell you the amount of sirens I've heard in the last week, and every single time I've thought of that Doppler effect. And I understand what the Doppler effect is now because of Chris and Sean. Hey, I know you got a lot on your docket.
I do.
Let's take our break, and we will come back with the second half of this here radio show known as The Good News on Glenn Klein Online right here. From Texas, Delbert McClinton.
At a truck stop in San Angelo, I saw a billboard about this rodeo last weekend out in El Paso, so I signed up to ride. I drew a bull called Original Sin, heard it kill a couple of men, figured this was something I could win, cause the devil's on my side. I was having myself one hell of a ride when I ended up disqualified, cause that danged old bull just up and died before they blew the whistle. When I got them North Texas blues, thought I'd paid all my dues. Then them South Texas blues told me, son, you ain't through. I did them East Texas blues.
This goes out to our Texas boy, the intermediator, Chris Harrington. And the good news on Glenn Klein Online is brought to you in part by thegurufgratitude.com. Get paid being nice. Thegurufgratitude.com. 888-493-7482. 493-7482 is a toll-free number with 888 in front of it. Everybody. The good news on Glenn Klein Online, brought to you in part by thegurufgratitude.com. Call toll free, 888-493-7482. That's the number to call. 888-493-7482. TheGuruOfGratitude.com. Trying to lose the Lone Star Blues. Delbert McClinton. Yeehaw. Are you familiar with the Delbert McClinton?
A little bit. I don't know his work that well, but I have heard his name quite a bit.
Yeah, he's good, man. I think.
He doesn't call here anymore.
He's good, man. He's an original. Delbert McClinton. Awesome. Did it make you feel kind of at home there in Nacogdoches, Texas?
I don't know. I don't listen to a whole lot of country western music, but now my wife is addicted to George Strait. She's got every album he's ever made.
She's straight with George Strait.
Yeah, she is.
Glenda Harrington.
Miss Glenda, she loves George Strait.
Who we love.
Yeah.
She's been helping you out with your shoulder situation. How you doing with your shoulder, by the way?
I'm just kind of cruising with it. You know, it's got a dull roar to it now all the time, but it's more flexible. I wouldn't say it's strong. I can't like lift a gallon of milk or anything, but I definitely am feeling, although vulnerable, I'm not feeling like I'm in pain all the time, or you know, feeling like something's going to go wrong at any moment. The first couple of weeks, it was like, oh, my gosh, don't sneeze, don't do anything.
Right.
Don't do anything rash, like flinch or sneeze. Or,
or take a bad poop, that kind of thing.
Don't do anything, man. Just don't do anything.
Dude, do you normally wipe with your right hand or left hand?
I'm a right-handed person.
I wipe with toilet paper myself. That's an old joke and a bad one, obviously. My girl Kat, who I had dinner with tonight, she's a regular listener of the program, and she said, is Chris healed with his shoulder yet? And I was like, well, he's on the mend. It's going to be a couple years, probably.
Yeah. It's a two-year process, right? They say. Yeah. In fact, they called it's called reforming. I think is what it's called. Remodeling. I'm sorry. Remodeling is when the tendons they overlap them and screw them together into the bone, and then if everything goes right, they will kind of marry in together, and they'll form a bond, and that bonding process is called remodeling, and that takes 12 to 16 weeks. So I'm just now ending week 7.
Right, you're in the midst of remodeling right now.
Yeah, so I'm in the midst of remodeling.
All right. Yeah. Me too, my friend.
Yeah.
If you will. I just remembered what was the other disappointing news that I had to say.
Okay.
But I'm not going to go into it, but I did remember it. I want you beautiful humans to know that the short-term memory loss is only temporary. And but I did remember. How do you know that you have a bad? How do you have a bad memory if you remember that you have a bad memory?
That's right.
That's one of the classic moments over these many months.
I remembered over time that I have a short memory problem.
All right, we turn it now over to the intermediator of the good news from Nacogdoches, the ever mending, the remodeling, Mr. Chris Harrington. Chris,
all right. I was talking with some people on Facebook, and we were just kind of going over some of the material that I've been using. And so I wrote a line on Facebook, and someone said, wow, you need to do one of your pieces about that and just kind of, you know, illustrate that a little bit more. And so I made up a word to talk about this whole thought that we have of combining morbid curiosity with the problem that we have of not taking our own advice, giving it away freely to other people, but not taking ourselves. And so I called that combined process inner neurotoxicity syndrome.
Wait. Say that again.
Inner
neuro
toxicity.
Yeah.
Syndrome.
Syndrome.
Yeah, INTS. And INTS is then the process of it's the illness that we are attempting to cure. So if we're in the emotional emergency ward and we're trying to cure ourselves of INTS, there are certain things that we can do that will increase our effectiveness in curing that that illness. And so I was just kind of going over that, and we started talking about it, and so I wrote this piece up. But the five things that seem to be at the top of the list of everything that we've been talking about, I think we're in like week 15 or 16 here. So during that process, we've talked about being effective and not reacting and being responsive, getting organized, and staying healthy.
Right.
And those five interpenetrating concepts seem to have almost everything to do with everything. If we just get that part, we're all kidding with each other, because we all talk about how much we know and how much we think we know, and the advice that we give to each other about you know, what we need to eat and how much we need to work out and all this stuff. And I just thought, if we all took our own advice, we'd all be geniuses and we'd have the bodies of gods, because we tend to think that we know everything about nutrition, everything about thinking, everything
well, one
about
thing,
learning.
Well, one thing's for sure that I can say is that we know enough.
Yeah, we know enough that we could do better.
We could do a hell of a lot better.
We could be way more effective than we are. You know, the question is, why is it that we end up wasting so much time? Why is it that we're not more effective than we are?
And what have you come up with?
Well, some people say that we're lazy.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
And some people have said that the reason we're not more effective is that we haven't had enough pain in our lives to teach us that we need to be more effective.
Mm.
I'm hoping that it's just a natural part of the process of waking up, and that as we integrate more of our unintegrated parts, you know, the parts of our psyche that haven't quite awakened yet, as we integrate more of ourselves, that we awaken to that effectiveness.
One of the challenges, of course, is that as we who are contemplating these thoughts encounter people that have absolutely no desire of being more effective, they're just perfectly happy with, or at least seemingly happy, with the effectiveness that they are producing. And some of them are extremely effective in the very areas that we're trying to work on ourselves.
Oh, sure.
Then, of course, we fall into the trap of feeling like, well, we are better than those people because we want to be more effective. And that is a huge stumbling block.
The thing about it is that intellect is not always everything it's cracked up to be.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like being tall. You know, being tall might be great if you're going to be a basketball player, but if you're you know, trying to fit in a small space,
yeah. If you want to fly
under some circumstance,
my former assistant camp director H is 6'8", and you know, it's pretty cool to be up there high. But I cannot tell you the amount of times that we would go places, and everybody would feel comfortable commenting on his height. And when he would want to get into an airplane, it's not so comfortable being 6'8" in our modern day aircraft. Is that all it's cracked up to be?
Yeah.
So intelligence isn't all. It's all it's cracked up to be sometimes.
Right. And what intelligence, if you really look at it in terms of like an IQ test, what it is a facility for being able to access information in a hurry. You know, it's like being able to run fast. You know, if you can walk around the track, you got around it. Some people can run, you know, a mile in less than 4 minutes. So not very many people can do that, but some people can.
Right.
And it's the same thing with having a high IQ. What that means is that you access information in a hurry. But I have friends that have what I think it's called an eidetic memory. I forget what it's called. Anyway, a perfect memory, a photographic memory. edict or something. I forget what the word is right now, but what it is that they remember everything that's ever happened to them. And things that we might not even pick up on, they pick up on those things too. And that sounds like a really wonderful thing, but then you'd never be able to forget things that were horrible. You'd remember, tragically, every joke that you ever heard, and you'd be correcting all the people around you because they didn't tell it right. Yeah. You'd take the J out of joy in so many different situations that you'd be a pain in the butt.
Yeah, you take the J out of joy, and joy becomes oi.
Yeah, oi. That's right. So a perfect memory has its attributes and its liabilities. Everything does. And one thing I've noticed about people that are supposedly high IQ is they tend to get in a different kind of trouble, but they still get in trouble. You know? It's an amazing thing.
What's your IQ? You know what your IQ is?
I don't know, 29, something like
no,
that.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. The thing is that I have had a lot of discussions with people about IQ, and I have friends that do have a high IQ, and when you're talking to people that have an IQ of 170, 180, 190, it's hard to believe that they would have holes in their education, but they become very specified like everyone else and specific in their learning areas. And the next thing you know, maybe social things are not such a big deal.
Oh, I've known, but I guarantee, do you know what your IQ is, dude? Seriously?
Do I?
Yes.
No, I don't really know. I mean, I have
I could almost guarantee you're in the genius range.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm serious.
It's like my Spanish. I know just enough Spanish to get in trouble.
Yeah, to be dangerous. Exactly. I've known a few geniuses in my life, and you guys are whacked. I mean, you guys are absolutely – you're about – no, I won't say that. I'll say it this way. You are the most relatable genius I've ever met. I know genius.
That's a good thing. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing for somebody to say.
And most geniuses have – they don't have a great sense of humor. You've got a very good sense of humor.
Well, you make me laugh a lot. I know that's right.
Right? Don't I?
Yeah, you do.
Why is that? Why do I make you laugh?
I don't know. I think we have a similar sixth sense of humor about things. And also some things that you've been through are things that in my own life that I have either had to work through or I'm working through. So I'm in some ways on a parallel structure with you. So it's a funny thing, you know, to be able to look in the mirror. You got to be able to laugh at yourself, and so I'm laughing at a lot of things that I that I see about you, and it's like, yeah.
No, I appreciate that because, yeah. Of course, you know that the archangel of Glenn, get your shit together, came into my life. And so I understand. I understand of what you speak, my friend.
Yeah.
This is Glenn Klein online. It's good news. That's Chris Harrington, Chris Harrington's Reality. Got about 15 more minutes left if you guys have a desire to get in at 1-800-436-3260. That option is available to you toll-free all over North America and all over the planet. Sean has guaranteed me that the lines are still working at 813-425-5773. Are you enjoying this process, this radio show thing?
Am I?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know if you were talking to him or not. I've been, I learned a lot. I'm not a public person. You know, I did great in the classroom, but speaking to a group of people has never been my forte. And I've always felt pretty nervous talking in public forums. So this has actually been a good thing for me to, you know, come out of my shell a little bit, so to speak, running Turtle 87. But it's been good for me. So I've learned a lot. I have enjoyed it.
I like how you slipped in your what is that? Your email address. It's your it's what you're known by. Running Turtle 87. How did that come about? Running Turtle 87.
It's about contradictions that turn into a paradox. running turtle. It does seem like they don't fit together, but I actually saw a turtle running. It was an alligator snapping turtle, and this guy was trying to get it by the tail, and so he had this stick and he was going to hold it down the ground, and the turtle turned his neck around. This is a turtle about maybe 2 feet in diameter, a little bit bigger than that. Turned his neck around, grabbed a hold of this huge limb that this guy had, and literally snapped it in half.
Wow.
And then proceeded to, like, haiku across the road and slip into the creek.
Where did that happen? Where did the running turtle happen?
It was down in, I saw that in Houston near the bayou. And this guy was on a road, this dirt road, and this guy had this turtle pinned down. But not for long, because that guy, he took out.
Wow.
So, and the 87 is a pretty important number to me, you know, 4 score and 7 years ago. But it's also,
all right.
When you think about being 86th, 86th is when you're dead, so I figure 87 is one more than that. So it's a survival thing. Maybe it's a magic thinking sort of a number, but I always projected, you know, that I would make it till I was 87. That seemed like a good year to go.
Well, you're...
So I've always thought about that. I tell my kids at school, every year I would go through the same thing, I'm going to retire, and every year I would, you know, number off the number of years I had left until I was going to die. That'd be very comforting for some people. I'll be glad when you're dead. I'll step on your grave.
Are you gonna be cremated?
Yeah, cremated. Yeah, I want to be dusted out in the yard.
Dusted out right there in Nacogdoches.
Yeah, I got my mom and my dad and my uncle all out in the yard.
Really?
Yeah, everybody just want to be cremated out in a certain garden, and so just like the family cemetery. Now we just dust everybody out.
That's cool. I want to be cremated. I want to have my ashes spread in the North Woods at the undisclosed location.
All right.
And I told my
handful of myself thrown off the Robert Francis Bridge in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Really?
Yeah.
Do enough people know that to make that happen?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Well, if they didn't, they
where is that? Where is that bridge exactly? Where is that bridge?
It's in North Amherst, Mass., which is 90 miles west of Boston, near the campus of University of Massachusetts.
That's awesome. I told my kids I want my ashes spread in the lake there in northern Wisconsin and on the pitcher's mound of the Senior Diamond Camp. And
right.
I want a little stone on the hill down towards the lake by our house. And all I wanted to say is, Glenn Klein, shalom, everybody.
Yeah.
That's all I need.
Very good.
It's not too much to ask, do you think?
All right. So the subtitle on this paper, this inner neurotoxicity.
Hold on for a second. I just talked about my epitaph. I just talked about my tombstone. And you want to go on to inner neurotoxicity?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Because it has everything to do with that by virtue of the fact that that's not happening yet. We still got a lot of stuff to learn.
I think, you know, it could go up, down tonight, but you never know. You're probably right.
Yeah. So the subtitle for this piece is How to Cut Your Stress by Half in One Day.
How to Cut Your Stress in Half by One Day.
In one day.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So here's how it reads. Each thing that you can list that is stressing you out is interconnected with many other layers of stress. When you get rid of one item, you get rid of all of its attending interconnections. So to name your top 10 unhealthy habits, aggravations, or difficult relationships is the beginning of a process of redirecting your life. So we know the things that are stressing us, right? We've talked about this before. You get through a layer, and of course there's another layer underneath that, you know, that's being protected by the top layer and keeps it from being visible. But every time you go through a layer, you get rid of all of its interconnections, and it's protecting all these other things that are also stressing you out. So it reveals those, and that's a process of becoming raw but also a process of, you know, getting some scars and learning to toughen up and increasing your tolerance and becoming more understanding. So it's a process that you have to be, well, I don't know if you could ever be ready for it, but you have to at least be proactive and work towards it and not take all this stuff personally. So then I had just three more sentences after that. When we obsess over things and make ourselves sick thinking about these stresses and revisiting triggers that remind us of our situation, we can literally stress ourselves into a state of panic, overwhelming anxiety, heart stress, emotional eating, hypervigilance, and other major illnesses that can run our lives. And in fact, I think that's a lot about what's happening in our entire country. We're so fractured. And we're so fragile that we actually have like a huge national case of OCD.
All right.
And I think that we could step away from that. Part of it is in like watching the media where they keep us so totally strung out. You know, if we just stepped away from the media for a week, you know, and just allowed things to settle down so we could get a good handle on it. What we'll find is that, for example, if you watch the news cycle on any channel, they'll cycle through the same news 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times in a morning. And by the time that you've been hammered with that all day, of course you remember it, but at the same time, you can't forget it.
Yes.
It's hammered into your head.
Yeah,
that compounding day after day is stressful.
I have backed off my news coverage that I pay attention to significantly, certainly since the election, so last November.
Yeah.
And, there's no – I mean, we know this, but it's like any other addiction, isn't it? It's morbid curiosity.
It's morbid curiosity. I just want to make sure I understood that correctly. How many people was it? How did they die? What was the situation? I mean,
how much more screwed up are they than I am?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the whole thing. That's the whole fascination with reality, so-called reality television. People love to watch people that they think are more messed up than they are.
Well, I found that one of the shows that we were watching for a long time, Big Brother, they went out of their way to find people who actually were on certain kinds of medication. They wanted to make sure they had people that had a psychological profile that would inherently create on the show some sort of buzz. You know, there's going to be a bunch of humiliation, a lot of anger.
Of course.
People just flipping out all over the place.
Sure.
That's big news.
That's drama.
Yeah, and that's what they want. But I think that's sad to work out the humiliations and monstrous problems and traumas of other human beings right in front of us and think that that's entertaining.
You know who seems completely tormented to me is Jerry Springer. Here's a guy that is clearly intelligent, former mayor of Cincinnati, is a multi. He's probably worth $100 million or more.
Yeah.
And he is really bothered by how he made his money. And yet he can – I mean, if you ever watch that show, I've seen that show probably a half a dozen times in my life in total. And he always has like a little moral at the end of the show. Like here's what – the lesson of this craziness was all about.
Yeah, right.
And, yeah, I mean.
But he always shows a lot of abuse, and that always is.
Oh, my God. And you talk about psychological profiles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
Well, it's the same thing, though, for people who email or Facebook things that are humiliating. You know, what is the real point here that human beings have? Faults and that they are sometimes unwise. You know, the whole movement of the jackass movement, you know, of people being punked and all that stuff. I find that there's something not just a little bit disturbing and disturbed about making up whole shows where the whole point is to make sure that the other person is completely humiliated.
Well, that was at the top of my list, was that try not to put other people in humiliating situations. That's a huge perspective change, because we want to feel good about ourselves by seeing other people that we perceive as having hurt us, humiliated, or potentially hurting us, attacking us.
Yeah, I think reflectively, I don't want to be in that position myself. So why should I put someone else in that position? You know,
because that's what we do as human beings.
My intention.
I don't want to be taken advantage of, so I'll take advantage of other people. I mean, it's just. Yeah. I mean, it's just as natural as the sun coming up out of the east.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is so freaking weird. Dude.
Well, I have two more sentences on this page.
All right, go ahead, and then we got to wrap it up.
All right, here we go. So here's how you cut the stress. You cut stress by deleting the offending triggers and reminders, by blocking, deleting, and getting rid of pathways to having access to us. Don't even let them get to you in the first place. So buy better food. You'll probably be eating better food if you buy better food, right? This may mean defriending some people, shutting down the computer, blocking some emails or phone calls, and taking charge of who has access to us so that we can be free enough to think our own thoughts without interference or being dragged back into the fray.
Wow.
And that is so difficult because, like we were talking about morbid curiosity, I just want to know what kind of horrible things are they saying now? And the last line is this. Number two, face the facts of what it is that has got you in its grips and allow yourself to step back and see the big picture of what it is that you are dealing with. Being really honest is difficult, but avoiding it until it kills you is not an option. Think for yourself about your own health and let yourself be as important as those you are constantly trying to please. If they ever did get to a place of peace, they would not be calling you up all the time and unloading on you. And I think that a lot of times we surround ourselves with negative people and negative circumstances. And I'm not saying that we need to wear rose-colored glasses and never see the news and never understand what's going on around us. But certainly, at a certain point, we could say that we're on overload.
Yes.
You know, we're on the precipice of... on every different level, and everybody who opens up their mouth, they just want to make sure that we know Armageddon is coming at us 1,000 miles an hour from a billion different perspectives. And so, if you were a kid and you were facing that, wouldn't you just shut down?
Yes.
And if you're an adult and you've been through a divorce or some hard thing, wouldn't you just shut down?
Yes.
And so, is that what we need is for citizens, is more people that are shut down, or do we need people who have a sense that they can get something done in their lives and be more effective and augment their lives with some effective change?
I posted on Facebook right before the show that we are not born winners or losers.
Yeah.
We are born choosers. And choose this day, you guys, life or death. I mean, we know what the end result's going to be. It's eternal life for everybody, but... we got some stuff to get accomplished over these next few hours and weeks and months and years and decades.
We can be more effective.
Until we're 87 and beyond.
All right.
There's Running Turtle 87. Chris, have a good week off. Get some rest, buddy.
All right, we'll do. Man.
I'm headed to the frozen tundra of Wisconsin.
I love that.
Oh, my God. I'm going to freeze my tuchus off. Seanage, thank you for everything. Appreciate you. Love you guys for listening, and just love you in general. And until next time, this would be Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!